This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The West burns again. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Monday, July 12th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Soaring temperatures and dry conditions have brought significant wildfires to at least six western states. Cooler weather is expected midweek.
What a day for space tourism. Entrepreneur Richard Branson and a small crew blasted to the edge of space yesterday on his rocket plane.
Street protests in Cuba, where demonstrators are calling for their communist president to resign, are considered the largest in decades.
And graduate students at elite universities borrowing so much money for tuition that they'll never be able to pay it back.
So a lot of the students that we spoke with for the story are enrolled in income-based repayment programs. So they pay a share of their earnings, kind of what they can afford. But sometimes their earnings are so low that they're not asked to pay anything. But the losses will ultimately fall to taxpayers. The American public is on the hook for this money.
Melissa Korn at the Wall Street Journal on the likes of film students at Columbia borrowing nearly $200,000 for a master's degree. Another brutal heat wave is enveloping the western U.S., and that's provided ripe conditions for wildfires. More than 300,000 acres are burning across six states. The National Weather Service says the largest of them, called the Bootleg Fire, has charred 143,000 acres in Oregon. Temperatures in the region that are near 100 degrees are not expected to back off until the middle of the week. As part of that, officials in California have asked all residents to reduce power consumption after the blaze knocked out interstate power lines. In Lassen County, some have been told to evacuate, but Carrie McCarger and her husband Jeff will not.
This is our entire life's work. Our cattle. Jeff grew up on a cattle ranch in Yerington. It's just a family legacy, so we're here to keep it.
In California, the so-called Beckwith Fire measures better than 83,000 acres near the border with Nevada. How hot is it in some parts? Death Valley in California's Mojave Desert hit 128 degrees on Saturday. That was actually 2 degrees cooler than Friday. Thousands of Cubans are calling on President Miguel Díaz-Canel to resign. They took to the streets in protest yesterday in the biggest anti-government demonstrations in decades on the communist island. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Reuters says the demonstrations from Havana to Santiago come amid Cuba's worst economic crisis since the fall of the Soviet Union, its old ally. People are experiencing a shortage of basic goods. There's also been a surge in coronavirus infections. Special forces jeeps with mounted machine guns roam the capital. Most protesters were home by 9 p.m., a curfew in place due to the pandemic. In one area of Havana, angry citizens rolled over an empty police car and threw stones at it. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Protesters were met by a smaller group of government supporters waving Cuban flags in the historic center of Havana. Cuba, home to 11 million people, has seen a growing number of protests over the past year. Well, the space tourism industry has gotten a rocket-sized boost. British entrepreneur Richard Branson reached the edge of space yesterday and safely returned to Earth on a rocket plane from Virgin Galactic, the company he founded. Mr. Branson and five crew members crossed one threshold of space, climbing 53.5 miles above the Earth's surface. By comparison, a commercial jet flies at around 6 miles above Earth.
Everything I dreamt about since I was a kid came true and more today. And we've been to space!
At the peak of the 15-minute journey, after separating from the launch aircraft, Mr. Branson and company unbuckled from their seats and experienced weightlessness, marveling at the view from a dozen windows aboard the spaceship VSS Unity. Separately, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos plans to soar into suborbital space a week from tomorrow on a rocket developed by his company, Blue Origin. SpaceX by Elon Musk plans similar travel later this year. Coming up next, Biden's defense of his Afghanistan policy. Enjoy a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies Black Friday in July event. Get amazing savings with up to 50% off high-performance computers and tech built for business. And be able to take your office with you with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, get great offers on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and more. All with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. And speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. The Biden administration is scrambling to defend its rapid withdrawal from Afghanistan amid a string of Taliban victories that have left the nation's fragile central government apparently barreling toward collapse. Is the better solution to leave thousands of American troops in place? More from Ben Wolfgang, Pentagon correspondent at The Washington Times. Ben, take us through it.
The most interesting thing that's really been striking me, Gordon, is just how the Biden administration seems to be clinging to this idea that the Taliban, to at least some degree, is interested in international legitimacy and may still honor the commitments they made last year to cut down on violence, to sever ties with terrorist groups, and all those other things. And it just doesn't seem like any of that's happening. I mean, you can pull up, stories from the region. Basically, every report that we're getting out of Afghanistan now is the Taliban is doing the exact opposite of virtually everything they promised that they were going to do when they struck a deal with the Trump administration last year. So I think for President Biden, look, it's obvious that in his gut, in his heart, he believes that this is the right thing to do to finally get America out of Afghanistan after almost 20 years. But, the idea that the administration seems to be putting some faith in what the Taliban's going to do going forward, that's where I think the critics and the observers, including myself, quite frankly, are a little bit puzzled and frankly kind of a little bit frustrated and almost scared, to be honest with you, about what might happen with the strategy moving forward.
All right. So some observers in your story said that the Biden administration does not seem prepared for these recent Taliban successes. How is that possible?
That's the amazing thing to me. I mean, look, I think we're both old enough to remember a few months back when President Biden came out and said, look, we're not going to honor the original date, which was May 1st, for the U.S. to be out of Afghanistan. That's the date that President Trump negotiated with the Taliban last year. President Biden said, no, we're going to do this a little more slowly, a little more cautiously, give ourselves a little bit more time and push that date. Originally, it was back to September 11th. Now he's saying August 31st. So, great. Everybody kind of thought that's going to give the U.S. a little bit more time to straighten things out. Like, A, where are we going to have drones based in the region if we absolutely need to conduct some kind of emergency airstrike in Afghanistan? It'll give us more time to get the Afghan Security Forces Air Force up to speed so they know what they're doing. It'll give us more time to get these Afghan translators out of the country who are in danger of being killed. But none of that was done, which I think is puzzling, and I frankly don't have an answer for why that is, why they weren't more prepared, A, for the Taliban advances, which I think everybody could see coming a mile away, who's followed Afghanistan for the past few years, and B, to kind of have our own house in order, if you will, about what we're going to do with our logistical questions about the translators, et cetera. So, I don't know. I don't want to just pile on the Biden administration here, but I don't exactly know what the point of those extra few months might have been when it seems like we have just as many questions now, if not more, than we did back in April.
We're speaking with Ben Wolfgang, Pentagon correspondent at The Washington Times. He's written a piece called Biden on Defensive as Taliban Advance. Also, it's easy to criticize here, and it's easy to criticize if you were to throw more troops into Afghanistan to try to help it stabilize. But what's the answer? Because I don't think anybody really wants to be there anymore.
No, there isn't an answer. And look, I mean, you're right. It's certainly in vogue right now. I think justifiably so to some degree to criticize President Biden and President Trump, quite frankly, who, let's not forget, was the one who initiated this diplomacy with the Taliban and made this agreement. And there was evidence back then, last year too, that this wasn't going to actually hold up the way they envisioned. It's gotten worse since then. But certainly we could kind of see it coming even back then, February 2020, when this deal was struck. So, you know, it is easy to criticize, certainly from afar, that we shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do X, we shouldn't do Y. But is there a great answer? No. I mean, President Biden's right. We've tried, you know, a decade ago, a surge, basically, in Afghanistan, sending 100,000 troops back in. We've tried having small, you know, peacekeeping forces of about 2,000-3,000 American troops in Afghanistan. We've spent trillions of dollars, literally trillions of dollars, on our own presence in Afghanistan and funding, equipping, training Afghan security forces. None of it's really worked.
He's been Ben Wolfgang, Pentagon correspondent at The Washington Times. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Firefighters working in searing heat are struggling to contain the largest wildfire in California this year, while state power operators are urging people to conserve energy after a huge wildfire in neighboring Oregon disrupted the flow of electricity from three major transmission lines. Fires are also raging in Nevada. Charles Moore is fire chief in Truckee.
Fire is threatening. We don't want to be fighting the fire and trying to get emergency equipment in while you're trying to get out.
A large portion of the West is baking in triple-digit temperatures that are expected to continue into the start of the week.
Number two.
Authorities searching for victims of a deadly collapse in Florida say they hope to conclude their painstaking work in the coming weeks as a team of first responders from Israel depart the site. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava says 90 deaths have now been confirmed in last month's collapse of the condo tower.
217 people are now accounted for, and 31 people are potentially unaccounted for.
71 bodies have been identified and their families have been notified.
Number three.
Pfizer plans to meet with top federal health officials to discuss the drug maker's request for federal authorization of a third dose of its COVID vaccine, as President Biden's chief medical advisor acknowledged that it is entirely conceivable, maybe likely, booster shots will be needed. Democrats are racing to finalize a bipartisan infrastructure deal and set the parameters of a broad child care and education plan, aiming to maintain an agreement with Republicans. After a two-week recess, senators return to Washington this week to determine the fate of much of President Biden's agenda. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he expects the chamber to take up a $1 trillion infrastructure agreement and a resolution that covers other Democratic priorities. In tennis, it's now 20 Grand Slam titles for Novak Djokovic, who topped Italy's Matteo Berrettini in the Wimbledon Championship yesterday. He's now tied with Rafa Nadal and Roger Federer in the Grand Slam race.
It's good to know your favorite tennis player, Novak Djokovic, now has 20 Slam titles.
Yes, my favorite.
Yes, of course.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. With some fitting rooms still closed and with more people shopping on the internet for apparel and footwear, return rates have skyrocketed during the pandemic. Now, with the health crisis serving as a wake-up call, retailers, including Walmart, are looking for ways to fix the fitting room dilemma. Insight from Lauren Thomas, retail reporter at CNBC. Lauren, what's happening?
It's kind of shocking, to be honest, that this is still an issue. Obviously, this time a year ago, a number of retailers, and specifically retailers that sell apparel, were forced to shut their stores for a period of time. And since those reopened, or since they have reopened, some companies are still choosing to keep those fitting rooms closed. Zara is one example that I think has gone viral on social media for this reason. Shoppers have grown frustrated. They visit a Zara store, and you'll often see these long lines because many people are actually waiting to return things that didn't fit. Either they bought online or they bought it in stores and then had to go home and try it on and then bring it back to the store. And that adds on, you know, massive cost, really, for retailers to process these returns. So yeah, it's interesting, and I think there are probably a number of reasons why some companies are still opting to keep those dressing rooms closed. I think one factor is labor and a shortage of labor in stores to maintain those fitting rooms. But yeah, shoppers actually returned about 430 $1 billion in merchandise last year. That's according to a study by the National Retail Federation. And clothing was more than 12% of that, and actually one of the biggest categories of returned items. So clearly, you know, there's a dollar value to put behind all of this. And the closed fitting rooms are just another headache that's leading to even more returns still.
All right. So as you point out in the story, retailers are turning to some of these startups like 3D Look. What happens with that? What do they do?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I've seen, you know, a number of these tech startups pop up on my radar for years now. But I think the pandemic really offered an opportunity for them to shine. So you mentioned 3D Look. Essentially, this is a virtual reality type experience, and they use augmented reality to where, as a user and a consumer, you can go in and scan your body, take a photo of yourself, essentially, which I know sounds a little scary, but this app is able to determine, you know, your body type and fit and what size jeans you would wear, for example. They've partnered with a denim retailer, and that was one of their first beta testings with this company called 1822 Denim. Then the app, you know, without having to go into a fitting room, the app tells you exactly what size you would be. So this startup is just one example of a company that's trying to solve that fitting room dilemma, is how I refer to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think many consumers are still hesitant that A, you know, this experience would even work, that it would be accurate. And B, I think there is some hesitancy to, you know, scan your body and kind of have all that data uploaded into one of these apps.
Thanks, Lauren. Lauren Thomas, retail reporter at CNBC. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Apply for a loan with a bank and you might get free coffee. But Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers personal loans with no fees ever. So consolidate debt with a no-fee personal loan from Marcus by Goldman Sachs or get free coffee. Go to marcus.com to learn more about our no-fee personal loans and other products today. Lending and deposits provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC.
An all-star team of the world's best journalists bring you the facts each and every morning. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday, July 12. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: more than 300,000 acres of burning wildfires in 6 western states. Richard Branson flew 53 miles above Earth on a space flight. Anti-government protests in communist Cuba said to be the largest in decades. Senators returned to D.C. this week to consider some $4 trillion in spending proposals. A Robert E. Lee monument has been removed in Charlottesville, Virginia. Italy beat England in penalty kicks for the Euro Soccer Championship. And the baseball dad with a major league save in the stands. That story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Might want to think twice about getting your master's degree at a pricey university. A new Wall Street Journal analysis finds elite schools in recent years have awarded thousands of master's degrees that don't provide graduates enough early career earnings to begin paying down their federal student loans. It's an incredible story by Melissa Korn, who covers higher education at the Journal. Melissa, what have you looked at?
Yeah, so for the first time this year, a bunch of new data came out from the Education Department showing graduate earnings, their debt at the time they graduate, their loan balances, and how much progress they've made in the first couple of years after graduation on repaying those loans. So analyzing that, you've broken down by field of study at each school, we were able to pinpoint who some of the kind of worst offenders were in terms of programs that leave students really buried in debt with very low earnings prospects.
Mm. All right,
and
so
we were pretty surprised to find, yeah.
I'll say Ivy League schools stood out, right? Northwestern you referenced in there. What stood out to me is here's this film student, right, from New Jersey who went to Columbia, $300,000 in debt.
Yeah, what's amazing, he took out about $255,000 to go to Columbia for his film MFA. But since then, he graduated a few years ago, and since then, that debt has continued to accrue interest. So it's now just under $300,000 that he owes, and he can't afford to pay really any of it off at this point.
Goodness. So what happens? He goes into default, or he pays for a few years, and it goes away? What happens?
Yeah, so a lot of the students that we spoke with for the story are enrolled in income-based repayment programs. So they pay a share of their earnings, kind of what they can afford. But sometimes their earnings are so low that they're not asked to pay anything. And if they stay in those programs in 20 or 25 years, their remaining debt will actually be forgiven, and it'll be taxed as income to them. But the losses will ultimately fall to taxpayers. The American public is on the hook for this money that the students can't afford to repay.
That's incredible. And the schools face no consequences, I think, as you point out in the story.
Yeah, that's one of the most startling things about all this. There are a lot of regulations in higher ed, including loan limits for undergraduate students, undergraduate studies, requirements that certain vocational programs show that they're preparing students for gainful employment and those students can pay off their loans. But there isn't that type of oversight for these graduate degree programs. So these master's programs just continue to enroll more students, turn them out. The schools get the tuition money, whether it's from a student paying out of pocket or from mom and dad or from the federal government loans. And, they take the money and they reinvest it in their schools, and the students just go deeper into debt here. There's no consequence for the schools.
Wow. We're speaking with Melissa Korn, higher education reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called The Elite Master's Degrees That Don't Pay Off. What do the schools say on their behalf?
Yeah, so, a lot of the schools say, listen, we provide financial support for many of our students. We do what we can. A lot of them have prioritized undergraduate financial aid. And the president of Columbia said that undergrads have a moral claim, or more of a moral claim, to financial aid than graduate students, because they're really just starting their adult lives. The counter argument to that is these are some very, very wealthy institutions. And yes, they have to prioritize and make choices on how they allocate their funding. But the choices that they're making right now really seem to be hurting master's students.
Where are the endowments in all this? Some of these schools have, $1 billion or more. Does that not go toward helping pay off some of this debt, or reducing tuition in the first place?
Right. So it wouldn't go to paying off the debt necessarily, and it wouldn't necessarily go to paying off reducing tuition, but it could go toward increasing scholarships, right? So they still charge a really high sticker price, but give more discounts essentially. And the schools say, yeah, we'd like to do that, but, and yes, we're rich, but we're not as rich as some other schools, and the money is already earmarked for other purposes.
Eye roll emoji, right? Melissa Korn, who covers higher education at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, weird things people have recently found under their property. Do you love seafood when you're out to eat but never make it for yourself at home? Yeah, me too. But the key to restaurant quality at home starts with high-quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Company. With Wild Alaskan Company, you're getting high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination. Money back if you're not happy. I went with the Wild Combo Box. Fired it up on the grill with a little garlic, lemon, and parsley. It was like sitting at some dockside restaurant in the last frontier. Each piece of fish was individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Wild Alaskan Company seafood is always wild, never farmed or modified, and contains no antibiotics. It's how nature intended it. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. Hey, Kletcher with us. Welcome into Monday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, anyone who's ever done a home renovation will tell you that you never know what you're going to find once you start taking down walls and ripping up floors. Even with those low expectations, one Detroit man must have been shaking his head when he found not one, not 50, but over 150 bowling balls under the back steps of his home. According to USA Today, David Olson was demolishing the steps on July 1st when he saw a black sphere buried in the sand behind some cinder blocks. Now, at first, he didn't think anything of it. Then he kept digging. The further he dug, the more bowling balls he found. He posted updates on his discovery on Facebook, and the tally continued to grow, up to 160 at last count. And while this might seem like a big inconvenience, Olson said that might have been a blessing in disguise, as it was easier for him to roll out the bowling balls than it would have been to remove the same volume of dirt and sand with a shovel, presumably.
Yeah,
so just roll them right on out.
Oh, my goodness.
So I guess they did some tracking. You know, people on Facebook, I guess, commented and said there was at one time a Brunswick bowling ball factory in this area, and they would sort of give some of the old messed up balls to the workers. They would bring them home to use for projects like this. So this is there might be other people in the area that also have bowling balls under their houses as well.
Okay, so everybody in Mr. Olson's neighborhood, please dig up your front steps and see what's underneath, right?
Yes.
Is that where we
are? And then we're all going bowling after that.
That's crazy. These almost seem like they were like a support system for his
service. Right, that's what
right?
it was. Yes, they basically used him as a support system. Yes, easier for them at the time to just get to put them in place than it was to probably put sand and dirt or wherever else they needed in there.
How much bowling balls weigh? 12? Are they 12? I think it's they range like 12 pounds,
16 pounds, something like that. Yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood.
And that's cheaper than 12 or 16 pounds of perhaps dirt, sand, or concrete.
If you got them for free from your bowling ball factory that you worked at, then yeah, sure.
That's something very good.
And from balls to bats, here's another bizarre under the house discovery made by a homeowner. According to a viral Reddit thread, a new homeowner says he discovered a large system of man-made tunnels home to a large number of bats carved under his house. The user said he recently bought the house in southern Italy and discovered the entrance to the tunnels in the barn. On Reddit, the homeowner said that it's cold in the tunnel and the humidity is 99%. He said nobody's been able to tell him what the caves were used for, and after some additional exploring, was able to even find an underground pond. Some users on Reddit joked that maybe there was a bank located nearby, and maybe these were escape tunnels. Others thought this could have been Batman's Italian hideout.
Oh, of course. Yeah, a little flight across the Atlantic.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Southern Italy, great place to vacation, even if you're Batman, right?
That's right. That's right. just to get away from Gotham and all that.
But why would somebody dig tunnels like that who's not Batman unless you were looking to escape or hide something, right?
So
something tells me he's going to find some other stuff down there.
Even just that there's a pond. Right.
Right,
it must be some natural spring or something that he's tapped into.
This is something out of a movie, it sounds like. This doesn't seem like it could be real.
That is wild. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Enjoy a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies Black Friday in July event. Get amazing savings with up to 50% off high-performance computers and tech built for business, and be able to take your office with you with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, get great offers on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. And speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today.
Thanks for being with us. As the West burns again from a heat wave, one concern is how that hot weather can affect your car. USA Today has some tips. If you have a leather interior, for example, prolonged sun exposure can lead to fading and cracking. To prevent damage to leather, you can tint the windows, use sun shields and seat covers, and, of course, park in the shade when available. With extreme heat, tire damage can also follow. Tire blowouts are one consequence. Heat can cause tires to build up pressure. It's important to regularly check the tire pressure and maintain the proper levels. The exterior of your car can also be affected by the heat, as it can make the paint crack. In order to avoid issues, you can wash and hand dry your car and wax it to help put a layer of protection in between it and the sun. Also, it's vital to check your car engine's liquids, as systems will be working overtime and can overheat. To avoid this, make sure your car has enough coolant, because if it's running low, it can cause systems to overheat and fail. And finally, another fluid to check is the engine oil, which is important to help reduce friction and temperatures in the engine. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Four people have been arrested and more than a dozen weapons and hundreds of rounds of ammunition have been seized at a downtown Denver hotel that is close to several events planned in conjunction with the upcoming Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Officers responding to a tip searched two rooms at the Maven Hotel a block from Coors Field on Friday night. Three men and a woman in their 40s were arrested and two vehicles were impounded. So far, investigators have not found any evidence to suggest the group was plotting a mass shooting or other similar attacks.
Number two.
Facing a nationwide increase in violent crime, especially involving firearms, President Biden will meet today with law enforcement, local elected officials, and advocates to discuss gun crimes. The White House says Biden will highlight his administration's push to increase funding for local law enforcement to improve community policing practices through the $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill he signed into law earlier this year. Some states and local governments are also using funding from the American Rescue Plan to fund youth employment programs and other measures that could help curtail crime.
Number three.
Billionaire Richard Branson reached space on a test flight for Virgin Galactic before gliding back to Earth and touching down safely yesterday. The Virgin Group founder launched with three company employees flying 53 miles above the Earth in a final test mission before kicking off commercial space flights next year.
As a kid myself, when I saw the moon landing, I was, you know, making rockets out of cardboard boxes, and I was, you know, making them big enough so I could get into my rocket and you know, dreamt of building a rocket to go to space one day. And yeah, that's what we done. Yeah.
Tesla founder Elon Musk and Amazon founder Jeff Bezos are also racing to reach space.
He's got to score here to keep England alive. And he doesn't! And Italy are champions of Europe!
Italy's soccer redemption story is complete while England's painful history in international play continues after Italy beat England at Wembley Stadium on penalty kicks 3-2 in Euro 2020. The game tied at 1-1 through extra time.
Okay, so some of these penalty kick takers had been on the bench for 2 hours. They come into the game for 3 minutes and then have to take penalty kicks?
And they were like 19, 20, yeah, and 22 years
what
old.
What are we thinking about there, Coach? 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
Hey, thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. Father to a pair of big league starting pitchers, Willie Ross, made a crucial save at a ball game in San Francisco over the weekend. CBS News says Mr. Ross, dad of veteran pitchers Joe and Tyson Ross, performed the Heimlich maneuver on a choking fan during a game Saturday between the Giants and Washington Nationals, dislodging bits of a hot dog to clear a woman's airway. Mr. Ross, by the way, is a pediatrician at Stanford Hospital. He was at the park to see Washington, the team his son Joe plays for. Dr. Ross was watching the game in a lower box wearing a red Nationals hat when he noticed the woman choking. She was unable to talk by the time he got there. After three hard thrusts on her stomach, he freed the food trapped in her throat. Police and paramedics eventually came to check on her. She was able to stay for the remainder of the game. The fan happened to be a nurse and had recently retired. It's not the first time, by the way, something like this happened for him. He spotted a woman at a local field in the Bay Area previously and alerted her family to call 911. That woman happened to be having a stroke. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.